So my sermon title today comes from that psalm that Eloise read earlier, Establish the Work of Our Hands, because as I mentioned before, today is Labor Day weekend. Tomorrow is, of course, Labor Day. And so Labor Day has an interesting kind of place in our culture. So I wanted to ask you, what does, when you think about Labor Day, what does it mean to you? Long weekend, barbecues. What else?
Watermelon.
Mm. The end of summer. How about the beginning of the school year? That was something always that I grew up in. It's like, okay, we got a short week this week, 4 days, but it's the first week of school. Of course, here school's already been in session for 2 weeks in Barrington, but that is always a school year. Yes, Pierre. Ah, union picnic. I like that. Yes, Eloise. That's right. No more. If I see any white shoes or white pants here next week, I'm going to be livid. I put away my white shoes, so that's good. I don't know. I used to have white. I don't have any white shoes. Anyway, well, so Labor Day sort of has this place in our culture as marking a season, right? As the end of summer, the beginning of school year, this transitional time. It's one last time to get the barbecue out or meet up with friends and family and have one kind of last summer hurrah. But rarely do we sit around and talk about the labor movements of the 1800s. Maybe they did at the picnic, here at your dad's picnic. But partially because Labor Day was always maybe before school, so we never really covered it in school. And partially because these kinds of things are not as prevalent in our culture. I actually didn't know the origins of Labor Day until I started researching this sermon. And I found out that the first Labor Day parade was in New York. In the end of the 19th century, on September 5th, 1882, about 10,000 workers gathered together under the sponsorship of the Knights of Labor, and they held a parade in New York City, and they were marching for workers' rights. Primarily at that time, the main issue was the implementation of an 8-hour workday. Some workers were forced to work as much as 16 hours a day, and there was no agreed upon what the work day should be, and they said we need 8 hours for work, 8 hours for sleep, 8 hours for leisure, and that is a day. And this gained some traction over the course of the next decade. And this early march was peaceful, but some of the other marches and some of the other events and protests were not as peaceful. You may have heard of the haymaking riot. And of course, the Labor Day as an institution started after the Pullman strike, which is a bit of local history, I found out. This took place in Chicago. And the Pullman train car company, was a company that was not only an employer of most of its workers, but it was also a landlord of most of its workers, because a lot of these workers lived in these Pullman residences while they worked for the company. And at this particular time in 1894, the company reduced the salary of its workers by 25%, but didn't reduce their rent at all. And so famously, they were squeezed between these two factors of having to pay their employer rent but not getting the wage that they needed to do that from their employer. And so they went on strike. And at first, this wasn't really a big deal. There wasn't enough of them to make a difference. But some of the other unions around the country decided to be in solidarity with them. And though they weren't striking, these other rail car workers refused to attach Pullman cars onto the trains. They refused to touch the Pullman cars, they said, until they treat their workers better, we're not touching their cars. And this led to a lot of backup. It was a huge issue at the time because, as you know, the the railroads in that time were a big deal and were the primary way that goods were transported across the country. And talk about, we've been talking about the supply chains here recently because of COVID, but it was nothing like it was at the end of the 19th century. These supply chains of crops that were not getting to market fast enough for them to be consumed and just wasted, all kinds of issues like that. And it culminated in a injunction by the president to go in and try to stop some of these strikers, some of these protests, and one of these particular protests ended in violence as the local militia and also the federal troops that had come in fired in upon these crowds, ending the lives of some of these protesters. As some estimates are, as many as 30 people died. And in the midst of all of this, in response to possibly the short-sightedness of putting in this injunction and kind of fighting against these laborers, and as a way of trying to make a conciliatory effort, Grover Cleveland and Congress in June 28th of 1894 created a national holiday, Labor Day. And this was meant to try to appease the American labor movement. And eventually this they came to an agreement and the strike was ended. But strikes like this and work for equal labor and for livable working conditions continued on and on throughout the history, particularly during the Industrial Revolution of the early 20th century. If you ever had to read The Jungle by Upton Sinclair in school, you'll know about how some of the very unsafe and, in fact, just inhumane working conditions that were in the factories at that time. And also, there were no child labor laws. And so families could pressure their children to go into the factories and not seek an education. And so a lot of this activism around that time towards work was for humane conditions and for the child labor laws and, again, for the eight-hour workday. And throughout the 20th century, there's been a fight for equal pay, both for genders and also amongst races. And we continue to look. You can find workers still continuing for the right to unionize, for a living wage, to increase minimum wage, and to provide health care. All of these kinds of things, all of these fights for laborers, continue on still even today. But as I was thinking about the modern era and how we view work and how we view labor, there is one particular labor activist that always kept coming into my mind, and that is of Garfield. Because as you know, Garfield just hates Mondays. And because, you know, that's the start of the work week. And you end your beautiful weekend of rest and relaxation, and you have to get back to the grind of work on that Monday. And that's why Garfield hates Mondays. But then I got to thinking, Garfield is a cat and doesn't have a job. He's not a spokesman for a cat food company. He doesn't draw the comics that he's in. Why does he care about Mondays? And I think because he's just a good, he really lives in solidarity with that labor force and the working. And as a kid, I was always hearing about work and the 9-to-5 grind and how hard work was and just how everybody hated going to work. But I thought, well, what is the alternative? What is the alternative to this work? And for that, there is a proverb from the Bible. Because in all toil, there is profit, but mere talk only leads to poverty. And so there's not the alternative of work should not be not working. Because that doesn't really end anywhere great either. There's no benefit, no upside to not working. And as I began to think about this, I realized that despite what Garfield might think, that work and labor itself is a gift from God. because there is great dignity in work. And if we look at that, the end of that psalm that we read earlier today, may the favor of God of the Lord our God rest upon us, establish the work of our hands, establish the work of our hands. In our prayer today, we took the translation of give success to the work of our hands. And why this was so significant to this particular psalmist was because this psalm was written while Israel was in exile, while they were not working for themselves. They were working for the Babylonians. And they knew that the true mark of freedom, the true mark of independence, would be to be able to work for themselves. That the work of their hands would be established for their own gain and for their own dignity. And so they knew that when they had the freedom to work for themselves, that would mean that they were in fact blessed by God, that that blessing would be revealed to them. Because it is a blessing to work. It is a blessing to contribute. And there is great dignity in work. And I find that an interesting way in which some of these things were mandated in Leviticus. Elaine alluded to one such thing in a more specific way, and that the instructions around work, and that you don't make the oxen work for no pay, and don't make the people work for no pay. But there is another way in which the dignity of work is maintained in the Levitical laws, and that is in Leviticus 19:9, where it says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not strip your vineyard bare or gather the falling grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God." Now, when we read this, the first thing we think of is, wow, that's really nice to care for the poor and for the aliens and for those who are in need, that they can have food, that they can have some of the harvest. But what is an interesting kind of side note about this is it doesn't say glean your harvest and then contribute a certain amount to the poor. It doesn't say gather up all these things and give it to them. What it says is leave it for them. Because there is a certain dignity in providing for yourself, even if it's gleaning from another field. There is a dignity to that working. There's a dignity to say that I am doing this. I am doing this work for myself, for my family, and for those others who are in need. And this is the way that God views labor. This is one of the ways in which labor is a blessing. And another way, actually, is a lot deeper. Another way that God views labor, how we get to this, we go all the way back to the creation story. All the way back to the very creation of humanity in Genesis 1. And if you remember that God created male and female in their own image, in God's own image, God created them. And then God says this, or then the scripture says this, God blessed them and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves upon the earth." And when you first read this, "be fruitful and multiply," you first think about, what do you think that that means? Have a lot of babies. Have a lot of kids. Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. But then it talks about having dominion over all living things. And in that way, being fruitful and multiplying is, in a sense, keeping the earth going. Planting trees, planting crops, making sure that the animals are in balance and cared for, making sure everything continues to be. From the moment that God created humanity, God gave humanity a job. God gave humanity work to care for the earth, to be fruitful and multiply, to put things out there, to make the world a continuing and better place, to maintain the creation that God had started. And I think when we think about work in this aspect of being in the image of God and continuing the creation that God started, I find that there are three aspects of this work that we can seek to find. And so, looking at this thing, we often think about labor as swinging an axe or plowing a field. But labor, as you know, can take so many different forms. It can be in the form of teaching. It can be in the form of artistry. It can be in the form of caring for, maintaining a house, raising a family, caring for those who are sick or in need, fighting for justice. But in all of these ways, I think that there are three aspects that are God-given that we reflect. And the first one of those is order, making order out of chaos. Because that's how God created the world, right? Initially, there was chaos. And God moved upon the waters, and God put everything in a certain kind of order. And so when we maintain that order, we are reflecting the God in us. When we labor to take something that is in disarray and put it in order, when something is chaotic and we make it less chaotic, when you're in a classroom, Eloise, and you have everything is going in all different directions, and you can organize it so that everyone is on the same page, following the same way. Not easy. But that is there, in that lies order. And that order is continuing the order that is creation. The second aspect of this is creativity, right? To say that there was creativity in creation is redundant. It's in the Word. And certainly, God was very creative when making the world. When you see a bug, they're not the same as every other bug. There's billions of different kinds of bugs and plants and animals. And though there is order amongst them, there is diversity. There is creativity. Just look at all the different flowers we have in our yard here at the church. Look at the giraffe. God said, let's make a horse and give it a giant neck and a couple of horns and a 3-foot tongue. That's creativity, my friends. And whenever we are being creative, when we are making something new, when we are finding a new way to solve a problem, to come at a challenge, when we are just creating art for the sake of art being in the world, when that labor is done in that creative way, we are reflecting God's own creativity in us. And lastly, the last gift that we have through our labor is craftsmanship. Now, this might seem like a given, right? The longer you do something, the better you get at it. We've taken that just as a given, but think of what a blessing that is. Think of what a blessing it is to be able to continually do something and get better and more efficient at it. Now, I don't know how many of you are on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube videos, but on Instagram in particular, I have become obsessed with following craftsmen and women. People who do one thing in a repetitive way so that they get so good at it that what they do is flawless. I've watched people make teapots out of clay and forming them, every piece of it, putting them together. Or watching, if you watched Japanese quill makers who make like calligraphy quills with thread and wood, it's fascinating. And when we look at creation, we can see great craftsmanship. The next time you are out in a bright sunny day, pick up a leaf and hold it up to the sun. And you can see the intricate, perfect craftsmanship of that leaf. Or look at a rose and see how every petal is perfectly arranged in its own way. Or look at a seashell and see that the pattern of a seashell in its sort of wide angle view is the same pattern in its microscopic view. This is the craftsmanship of God, and this is something that we, being in God's image, have been blessed with as well. And what's interesting about all of these aspects of labor, all these aspects of our work and creation, is that they are all intertwined. One cannot really exist without another. You can't have craftsmanship without creativity and order. You can't have creativity without first entering into that role of craftsmanship. All of these things are intertwined, and they all come from God. And as we labor in that way, we reflect God and our being made in God's image. But still, even with this, I think about having to go to work in the morning and it being tough. And why is that? Well, I'm wondering if it's because, not because that work is a blessing, isn't a blessing, or because we aren't blessed by God with these great aspects of what our work can mean, but perhaps it just means that we need a break. So after God created the world, what did God do? Took a day off. He said, enough with all this working. Whew, I'm tired. I want to rest. And not only did God rest, but God mandated that we rest, that we take a Sabbath, that we take time off. But a lot of us, what do we do with that time off? We fill it with things to do. Oh, I don't want to be sitting around all day. That's lazy. I got to work. I got to clean the house and go out. Find a hobby. Find something to do. When really, the mandate is for us to do nothing, to do very little, so that we can be recharged for the work that is ahead of us. So as you have Labor Day this week, I invite you to take this time to rest, this extra day that has been granted to you for over 100 years, and make good use of it. Rest. Relax. And as you do, reflect on the work and the sacrifice of our ancestors. The work that they did, the sacrifices they made in order that we might have the just labor practices that we have today. But also reflect that there's still work to do. That there is still work to do where there is needs in the labor community, in the migrant community, the poor community, and how we can best put our gifts of work to better those situations. And the people said, Amen. Amen.